Track 6. Morning, everybody. Just about back up to speed here at the sports desk after a hectic weekend sitting in front of the television till the not-so-small hours on Monday morning, watching the climax to the American football Super Bowl. That's their cup final, if you like, and it was worth watching. But more of that later. First, the local sporting action, and it was a welcome return to winning ways for the Stourbridge football team, the Glass Boys, thanks to a 2-0 win in the league against Colville on Saturday. But, just like the Super Bowl, it was close, the second Glass Boys goal coming in the 90th minute. They had Luke Benbow to thank for that, and for their first strike on the half-hour mark, and the win lifted Stourbridge up to fourth place in the Northern Premier League table. A win was much needed after the 4-1 drubbing at Sutton Coldfield, which I told you about last time, followed by a defeat by the same score against Grantham in the League Cup competition on Monday last week. I doubt Stourbridge would have been too worried about that. The league, above all the possibility of taking part in the promotion playoffs, is their priority. Against Colville, Glass Boys had always looked to be on top, yet they found it difficult to make their dominance count. The visiting goalkeeper held them at bay time after time. But fourth place in the league table after that win then became second place after an overwhelming 4-1 win back at a very soggy Memorial Ground on Monday evening when Stourbridge disposed of Ashton United by 4-1. I've not seen a full report on this match yet, but I do know that the home side were already a goal to the good after just 3 minutes, and it sounds as though they were in total control. Only Blyth Spartans stand above Glass Boys in the league now, but the gap between them is significant, 7 points, and they both played the same number of games. All the games are significant for Stourbridge from now on until the end of the season, starting with a big one on Saturday, a visit to Grantham, who are also very interested in the promotion race. At the other end of the league table, Halesowe in town are still struggling. They were playing at Matlock Down on Saturday and they were denied a much-needed point when the home side scored in the 90th minute for a 2-1 victory. Town were due in action at home last night, Tuesday, against Stafford Rangers and badly needed a win as they sit precariously in 19th place in the divisional table. As far as the national soccer news is concerned, the Premier League is now two-thirds through its season and Chelsea look to be running away with the title. They have a 9-point advantage over second-place Spurs and a superior goal difference. You'd say at this stage the battle is on for second place, with Tottenham, Manchester City, Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United the chasing pack and the rest pretty well nowhere. I think it's actually a bit more exciting at the bottom end of the table, where some of the teams who looked doomed are suddenly starting to win games. Two of the bottom three, Hull and Sunderland, won at the weekend, and only 2 points separate the bottom six. West Bromwich these days are the only West Midlands team in the Premier League, and while they're not in contention for honours, they're enjoying a respectable season. Their 1-0 win over Stoke on Saturday cements them in eighth place. With Villa, Birmingham City and Wolves all in the Championship, you might have hoped for a bit of promotion-chasing excitement this season, but all three are fairly stolidly stuck in mid-table. Well, Wolves maybe not quite so securely, but I think they'll probably be OK by the end of the season. Only Blues, Birmingham City that is, out of these three, won on Saturday, a fairly uninspiring 1-0 over Fulham. But however dull it was, the victory must have come as a relief for the Blues manager Gianfranco Zola, as it was his team's first win in 10 matches since he took over. Villa lost by 2-1 at an improving Notts Forest, and Wolves went down by the same score at Burton Albion, a defeat which leaves them in 18th position in the Championship League table, 7 points above the drop zone. I've often said over the years that I have a soft spot for Walsall and they're enjoying a quietly encouraging season in League One. Saturday's 2-1 win over Northampton has them in 11th place, not far off the promotion playoff positions. They don't lose many games, but they draw too often. If they had managed to convert a couple of drawn games this season into wins, they'd be right up there. Now for rugby, and along the road at Stourton Park on Saturday afternoon, I have to confess your reporter was a backslider. I was there in body, but in spirit and in reality I was sitting in the pavilion glued to the television as Scotland faced Ireland in the opening match of this year's Six Nations tournament. When I emerged, blinking into the sunlight at the end of that international match, the scoreboard in the Stourbridge game, 5 points against 34 for Sale the visitors, almost made me head straight back inside. but I managed to dally, and in fact I saw the best part of a poor Sturbridge display as they promptly scored 2 tries. But at 19 against 34, that was the end of their inspiration, and the match finished with an easy victory for Sale by 40 to 19. According to those who'd stuck it out and watched the whole match, Sturbridge never woke up during the first half and failed to offer much resistance to the team lying second in the league. A mid-table finish to the season for Sturbridge beckons. Of course, I'm much happier talking about the Six Nations rugby after the opening weekend. England, everyone's favourites this year, stuttered to a narrow win over France at Twickenham. Scotland enhanced their status as an improving side with a narrow, but from my prejudiced viewpoint, deserved win over Ireland at Murrayfield, while Wales, after a slow start, ran away with a big win over Italy. Scotland, Ireland and Wales all managed 3 tries, but none of the sides has yet been able to take advantage of the rule change this year and pick up a bonus point for scoring 4. However, in losing by 7 points or fewer, both France and Ireland did glean a losing bonus point. As well as spending my Saturday afternoon at Stourton Park watching my fellow Scots in action against Ireland, I dallied into the evening to watch the England versus France game, an encounter which could have gone either way, as, I must admit, could the Scotland versus Ireland clash. I didn't feel England's vaunted dominance amongst the forwards was that much in evidence. Itoje, such a towering figure last year as a second row, looked out of place in the back row, I thought, and he had a relatively anonymous game. But England managed a win. However, Wales await in Cardiff this coming weekend, and after their runaway win over Italy, are likely to prove a handful. In tennis, Team GB moved on to the quarterfinals of this year's Davis Cup competition after a win against Canada in Ottawa, but I felt it was a somewhat less than satisfactory way to win when the young Canadian Shapovalov was excluded from the final singles match when, after losing a point in his match against Kyle Edmund, he smashed a ball in sheer frustration and hit the umpire full in the face. I believe no malice was intended. The ball could have gone anywhere, and perhaps a forfeiture of that game, rather than his being given a red card, would have sufficed. I don't think his exclusion altered what would have been the final outcome. Edmund was already 2 sets to the good at the 5th and final match of the tie, and Great Britain were very likely to have won the match by 3-2 in any event. Dan Evans of Team GB, celebrating his first week ranked inside the world's top 50 male players, had opened the match on Friday with a straight sets win over Shapovalov, but that was cancelled out by Edmund losing to the other Canadian singles player, Pospisil. In Saturday's doubles encounter, the British pairing of Jamie Murray and Dominic Inglot eventually overcame the Canadian pair. The first 3 sets were all settled by a tiebreak to win in 4. Sunday's last 2 single matches featured Pospisil versus Evans, which the Canadian won, again after 4 sets, before the unfortunate outcome in Edmund versus Shapovalov, which Edmund was leading 6-4, 6-3, 2-1 at the point where he was awarded the match. Team GB will face an away match against France in the quarter-final, I believe due to be played in April. Well then, what about that Super Bowl on Sunday night? This must have been the ultimate game of two halves, right enough. The New England Patriots were pre-match favourites, but in the first 2 quarters they could not get going. Their much-vaunted quarterback, Tom Brady, looked disconsolate as he was unable to move his team up the field time after time, while the Atlanta Falcons roamed hither and thither, their quarterback throwing a succession of pinpoint long passes to his receivers. After a scoreless opening quarter, the Falcons scored 3 times in the second, in reply to which the Patriots managed a single field goal. With the score at 21-3 at the interval and Lady Gaga running the halftime show, I nearly headed for bed thinking the match was all over as a contest. In the third period, it became 28-3, and then suddenly the Patriots got their game together. Now it was Brady who seemingly couldn't miss his receivers. Pass after pass was caught, some of them miraculously, and the scoreboard went into reverse. At full time, the score was locked on 28-all. Twice the Patriots had gone for what's called a 2-point conversion of a touchdown. These can be hit and miss, but both had succeeded, and for the first time ever in the Super Bowl, the match went into overtime. First to score would win the title, and it was the Patriots who completed the greatest ever comeback in Super Bowl history. A personal triumph for quarterback Brady, who threw the ball for an incredible 466 yards during the game. English cricket action this week has been off the pitch as Test captain Alistair Cook announces he is giving up the captaincy. I believe he's been an effective skipper during 5 years in charge, but it must be an onerous task, and probably his success as a batsman has begun to suffer due to all the stresses and strains of leading the team. The mantle is likely to pass to Yorkshire's Joe Root, young for an English skipper at 23 years of age, and I hope the burden of leading the side doesn't affect his batting, on which England usually rely heavily. There's a 5-test match series in Australia coming up next winter, which will test anyone's mettle. And it's time for me to resign from this week's sport desk as the clock ticks on. I'm going up to the Yorkshire Dales this coming weekend to follow Stourbridge Rugby in their match against Wharfedale. News of that and the other local and national headlines next time. But until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.